Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by Bet Online, Thursday, November 17th, as we look forward to a busy NFL slate. Of course, NFL Week 11, the topic for discussion. But before we get there, we bring in the incomparable Payne Insider. And Payne, wanted to get your thoughts on a Monday Night Football game gone awry. I know a number of our listeners not that thrilled, and we still recommended the game at pick. You and I, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it for our listeners' sake, sitting on a little better number, were able to walk to the window looking over our shoulder.
Yeah, and there's always a few game-changing plays throughout the course that determine your fate. And so I'm not going to claim, you know, month-old sour grapes, because we did get a little bit better number. We did cash, but Tyler Boyd, big drop in the end zone there. Momentum was going their way. Clearly a huge difference going up six as opposed to two scores with a touchdown there. And then momentum still carrying over there. You get a big run play outside on a pitch, gets called back for holding, which would have put you deep in giant territory. So those two plays really changed the dynamic of that game. But the Cincinnati Bengals, just not very good. The question I have for you, though, and I've been known to have information trickle across my desk, but this steamy hot nugget just came in here. Rumor has it you may have been rooting against the loyal Bet the Board listeners who took Pick'em due to a high-end fantasy league matchup that came down to Monday Night Football in Sterling Shepard's go-ahead touchdown.
You know what? It's every now and again, and I can compete in a high-stakes fantasy league with some prominent media personalities, so there's a little bit more skin in the game than the traditional fantasy league that I'm sure a lot of our listeners compete in. So it was a combination of things. Actually, one bet that I lost, Ezekiel Elliott ripping off a long run to close out the game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm going, this is useless. It's going to cost me a money line bet I made on Pittsburgh grabbing a price. And then you go into Monday night needing 14 fantasy points from Sterling Shepard, hoping that he picks them all up in garbage time when the Giants are down by two touchdowns. So we're able to cash a number of ways. Lo and behold, fourth and one, it's Sterling Shepard breaking the hearts of all the Bet the Board listeners to my gain, slipping out of there with a victory of less than 2 points, now atop the division at 8-2, controlling my own destiny as we head closer to the playoffs.
There we go. I just wanted to give this platform to you. You care to comment? You did.
Yeah, I mean, we have to give it a little behind. We have to give it a little context, and I am definitely not that fantasy guy who's rooting for certain players above the financial security of our listeners and especially our bets. So it put me in a precarious predicament on Monday night. Did think it wasn't going to matter, and then I remembered it was Andy Dalton, the Cincinnati Bengals, trying to mount a late comeback and pain. I'm not even sure they crossed midfield when they faced that one-point deficit.
Whew. That offense is a mess, and when it's not A.J. Green, there's just not much else there. Past the opening drive where they clearly schemed some stuff up in the 2 weeks and found Eifert down the middle on a linebacking core that just cannot cover the tight end, they didn't really go to him. There was a busted play where Dalton gets outside the pocket, JPP steps up, and Dalton kind of just dumps it off to Eifert. But aside from those two plays, he just really wasn't involved. Used him more as a blocker. We know that offensive line struggled all year. That was the key matchup to look at when we talked about this game on Monday. And so Eifert was in the backfield a bunch, helping protect, helping block. And it just really limited what the offense could do for Cincinnati.
Do you see things with the Bengals that you believe can be corrected as they go into the back half of the schedule? Or is it a mere formality that a team we've grown accustomed to being a playoff fixture, albeit one that fizzles in their first game, is going to miss the postseason and ultimately cost Marvin Lewis his job?
Yeah, I believe so. And this is kind of the thing. It's tough to fire Marvin because he's made great hires with the coaching staffs. They've made the playoffs, I believe, 5 years in a row. And as a Dolphins fan, you know, it's tough to clamor for somebody else's job being, you know, lost when this team hasn't made the playoffs. And so, we would love, and I think there's a lot of organizations that would love to make the playoffs five consecutive years. So you have to tip your cap to that. But just epic disappointments every single year in the playoffs. This was a team, again, and I've said this a bunch, that we were down on coming into the year. A lot of professional bettors going under 9.5. Just thought the losses of the coordinator positions was too much to overcome, and it seems to be the case again this season.
And with Marvin, even if he were to lose his job in Cincinnati, which we think is a likely scenario, I can't imagine if he wants to coach somewhere else, he's out of a job for all that long.
As a head coach, I'm not sure he gets back in as a head coach right away, but there's certainly some gigs that he may take if he's willing to take a step down and be a coordinator again. A lot of these guys, you just never know. Maybe they take a spot in the NFL front offices. Now these lucrative TV deals for ex-players and ex-coaches. Maybe you just step away for a few years, take the seven-figure salary there on television and kind of just sail off into the sunset. So that one will be interesting to monitor.
On the flip side, we look at the Giants, who now sit at 6-3 amid a four-game winning streak. I think the common takeaway for the Giants as you look at margins of victory, they're not exactly operating with a huge point differential. Six wins, a one-point win over the Cowboys, 3 points over the Saints, 4 points over the Ravens, a full touchdown against the Rams, which seems to be the anomaly, a five-point win against the Eagles, and of course that narrow one-point victory against the Bengals. You don't have to be a math wizard that says this team might be flirting with disaster.
I'm going to be a math wizard. I think off the top of my head that's 21 combined points in their six wins. So they're winning the close game this season, something they couldn't do a year ago. When you look at the win-loss record from a year ago, 8 losses by a combined 26 points, some overtime losses, a lot of one-point losses. So we think those even out over time, and it seems to be the case this season. Lost them all last year, winning them all this season. The defense was much better than expected, but I don't really like what Cincinnati's doing offensively. A lot of just gimmick plays, and again, if there's a cornerback for the opposing team that can man A.J. Green and contain him one-on-one, it's going to be a tough day for that for that Bengals offense.
One last thing about the Giants before we close the book on the Monday night game. Do we think that the market will ultimately have to react to this win streak and price them out of being somewhat reasonable? We see the Giants, we mentioned their slim margins of victory, nearly a touchdown or even over a touchdown favorite this week when they play host to the Chicago Bears, a game that we're not going to deal with in any great detail.
Yeah, I would think, and just kind of looking at my notes here, and I circle spots on the schedule at the beginning of the season and then kind of reevaluate them week to week, look at some of these look-ahead games that I've circled. So Chicago is a spot here that was clearly circled. 7.5. That's a steep price for a team that's not scoring a ton of points, but a lot of injuries for Chicago. That's kind of my fear. The suspension to Alshon Jeffery, Kyle Long now out on the offensive line. So that's made it tough. Certainly this is a spot I was looking at Chicago in.
The voice you hear on the other end of the line, that of Payne Insider. You can follow him on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I am your host, Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. Of course, the podcast Twitter feed, at BetTheBoardPod. Visit the website, BetTheBoardPodcast.com. And before we get into the games for this week and the marquee schedule, time for our favorite part of the week where we head out to parts unknown. Welcome in the world's biggest Seattle Seahawks fan. You can follow Dave Mason on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. And Dave, before we find out how many extra houses and villas you were able to build for yourself with Seattle's outright win against New England on Sunday night, wanted to talk a little UFC. We know UFC 205 broke all sorts of records, but was it a good day for the house when Conor McGregor knocks out Eddie Alvarez?
Not really. volume wise, it was great. We had a lot of great volume, so that I'm always happy with that from more of a marketing standpoint. But from the lines guy's perspective, no, we lost pretty big on the card, especially that fight. Connor, we were getting a lot of two-way action earlier in the day. I was like, okay, cool, a lot of two-way action. And then you know, Sharp started hitting Connor, and that price started going up, and then all the late public was all over Connor. So it was a pretty big win for the public Saturday night.
Were there any other big fights that might surprise some people that saw more handle than you guys anticipated?
They were all pretty good, especially that main card. I mean, the Weidman-Romero fight saw a lot of action. The two girls, I'm not going to even try to pronounce their names. I'm horrible with the Eastern European names. The two Polish girls who duked it out, that saw a lot of action. And then the Wonder Boy versus Woodley that saw a lot of action. Of course, those were all no action because it was a draw. I still can't believe they called that wrong at first in the ring. I was like yelling at him. That's a majority draw. And I had to get on. I got on the phone real quick with her because our guys. I was concerned that our guys would hear that and grade it real quick, and then have to regrade it or not see it right away and just move on to the next fight or whatever. So I got on the phone real quick with our lines manager and was like, hey, dude, get on the phone with your guys and make sure they didn't grade that or else it's going to turn into a potential mess. So luckily our guys did grade it right away. So they got it right. But the draw actually paid off on the props. I think that was like 70-1. So that was a nice hit for all the draw bettors. Draws rarely hit in UFC or MMA rather, but that hit on Saturday on a big fight. So we got stuck a little bit on that one.
So Mason, UFC 205 didn't go so well for the house, but I hear you made it all back up NFL week 10. Just how big of a weekend was it for you guys in the NFL?
Oh, it was great. I mean, we've been waiting for that. It's been a grind. NFL's been a grind over the last 4 or 5 weeks, I guess it's been, especially, thanks to the Patriots. But now this weekend, we no complaints. That was probably our best or second best NFL weekend of the season. So, like you said, the Seahawks really helped us out big time. That was our biggest winner of the weekend by far, one of the biggest of the season. Titans were good to us, Broncos, Dolphins, players got the Cowboys again, especially that money line. The spread was a lot of two-way, but the money line, we were buried on Cowboys winning outright. Ravens was big and Rams, so overall, no complaints. College was a little bit better for the players. It was a small one for the players.
Starting to see some of those same trends emerge this weekend, Dave. We know that the Patriots play in that dreaded late afternoon time slot, laying double digits on the road at San Francisco. But again, Dallas, a touchdown favorite against Baltimore. How are some of the public decisions starting to shape up?
A lot of one-sided action. Cowboys again. What, they're like 8-1 against the spread now, and the public's pounding them, about 82% on the Cowboys. Steelers, about 93% of their early money is on the Steelers. And again, these numbers will come down as late money comes in. Majority of the money is yet to come in. Dolphins are big public play, and the Giants and the Patriots. So, yep, it's going to be an interesting Sunday again.
Mason, if you just add a hook there to that Baltimore game, you might actually start getting some sharp action. So that's always an option for you guys on that one. Anything early in the week, I know, in terms of sharp action on the board?
Yeah, we do have some, actually, a few. We have Chiefs -7, that's 7.5 now. Giants -7, that's 7.5 now. And Saints tonight +3.5. That's +3, +101. Some college just for an extra bonus. Louisville -14. Sooners -1.5. Utah -13.5. And Southern Cal -10.
So with all the action in the books, we know that some folks may need to go out there and reload if they went to the window with a hefty wager, teaser, or moneyline parlay on the Patriots. What kind of promotions can our Bet the Board listeners expect at Bet Online this week? Maybe you guys are in the holiday spirit with Thanksgiving looming and a major football weekend on deck.
Yes, sir. We still have our bonuses out there for your listeners. If you do not have a Bet Online account, get over there and sign up at betonline.ag. And use promo code 75BTB, that's 75BTB, for 75% welcome bonus. And if you already do have a BetOnline account, but you're looking to reload and you have not claimed this offer yet, use promo code 50BTB for a 50% reload bonus. And again, that's one time. Both max bonuses are $1,000. Head on over to promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard for all the terms and conditions.
Dave, always great getting your take on things. We'll be with you next week, but on Tuesday, a reminder to all our listeners, as we told them earlier in the show, given the holiday recording schedule. So best of luck on both the college and pro front, and we'll look forward to see how all that Turkey Day action is shaping up with you, and we chat with you next week.
All right, fellas, have a great weekend.
Always fun, Payne, when we talk a little UFC with Dave. We know that that really is his bread and butter. Maybe not so much as a guy working behind the counter for a sports book, but as much a fan as anything else.
Yeah, he's a big UFC fan. He's usually got some great takes on it. So he's well in tuned with UFC, and he was spot on accurate there with the Conor McGregor move early in the week. Got a little dummy action there on the dog. A lot of professionals were running to take Conor at minus 10. And that trickled all the way up to about minus 50, and then he said closed around minus 160 where the public came in late on McGregor, so that was certainly not a good result when pros and Joes on the same side and end up cashing pretty easily.
One of the things I actually wanted to ask Dave about, but figured we'd give him a chance to breathe and maybe bring it up next week. So much buzz around the potential of a Conor McGregor-Floyd Mayweather fight. From a gambling perspective, I have a rough idea of where I'd open a line if it was a true bookmaker number. Obviously can't do that. If you're assuming they're working under boxing rules, let's call it a 12-round fight. Floyd probably north of 40 years old if they're getting in the ring. How do you even begin to handicap? And Payne, what would you potentially see a price that odds makers would feel comfortable hanging there?
Not a clue, but I would feel like we're going to be going, you know, to the window with a wheelbarrow, you know, laying as much as we possibly could with Floyd Mayweather, because that's not even going to be close. But from the perspective of both fighters, that's an absolute monster payday, and they should really want to see that fight get made. Everyone would be tuning in, but I feel like there'd be this contingency that says Conor McGregor's just as big of a name, maybe even bigger right now with Floyd Mayweather not really in the limelight. I would lay 50-1 on Floyd, and I would think that's a bargain under boxing rules, but I could envision that the sports books are going to be pounded with Conor money there. And would maybe open a little bit lower than that.
Yeah, I tweeted out
50-1 short.
Yeah, I mean, some folks asked me about it, and I said I could realistically see bookmakers using 1-15, 1-20, because they're going to get 98% of the tickets on Conor McGregor. The real question becomes, that's nowhere close to a real number if we're assuming it's boxing through and through. I know McGregor has a bit of a stand-up boxing background, but we're talking about one of the greatest pound-for-pound fighters of all time. I think it would be. The question I have, is it even entertaining? Conor's going to go in for the attack. You might actually see Floyd Mayweather with a knockout if Conor opens himself up.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And, you know, obviously Floyd may want to let that fight linger on a bit longer just for the fans. He's been known to kind of toy with guys a little bit, not want to open himself up. He's a defensive fighter. But yeah. That fight gets ugly, and it gets ugly early. Like I said, I would lay 50-1. I'd probably even lay 100-1. Like, it's just, that's not even a match under boxing rules.
Yeah, and we're talking about a massive payday, something that I have to imagine, while it does offer up a bit of a gimmick quality, something these two might want to really try and explore if their egos allow for it, knowing how many zeros they'll be able to put at the back end of a paycheck. But on to bigger matters at hand. The National Football League, as we did last Sunday, were able to get the Philadelphia Eagles to the window as a short home underdog or even right around a pick'em. Payne, let's start at the top of the board with an AFC South matchup. The Indianapolis Colts come into their matchup with the Tennessee Titans fresh off of a bye. My question is this with Tennessee. We've seen them start to play much better football. The offense showing flashes of brilliance. Marcus Mariota quickly becoming one of the most reliable red zone options in the entire league. Has the betting market finally caught up to Tennessee? As we heard Dave Mason say, Tennessee was one of the biggest decisions for them a week ago. I think bet splits approach 80% on Green Bay. The public remembers what they saw last, and we're seeing them come back in on Mike Mularkey's team again this week.
Public does remember what they saw last, and they saw the Titans just drubbing a public team in the Green Bay Packers. So would expect some money on Tennessee, especially with the out of sight, out of mind theory there with the Colts on their bye week. And when I looked at this game, it was more from a totals perspective, and it's just amazing to see the drastic difference in the market where you have books using a 52, others using 53.5. And I think if you use your entire season's numbers, you probably come to 51.5, 52. If you kind of just use recency the last 4 or 5 weeks, your number's probably closer to that 53.5 range. So there's matchup issues that are positive for both teams. Can the Colts use the bye week to mask some of those glaring weaknesses that are really just pure strengths for the Titans? Can the Colts stop the run? They're just dead last in many of the important metrics, success rate to efficiency when it comes to stopping the run. They have issues covering the tight end. We know Delanie Walker, that's the Flying Hawaiian's favorite target there. So some nice advantages for Tennessee's offense. And when you look at the other side of the ball, you have a Titans defense that's just had serious trouble in the back end. They're 26th in pass defensive efficiency. And you try to dig into these numbers a little bit more to see how meaningful some of them really are. They've faced one of the easiest slates of opponent offenses, 29th easiest, in fact. You look at the Colts, they put up 27 points, offensive points, on the road at Tennessee. That was without Moncrief, without Dwayne Allen, without Dorsett. That trio is going to be available this time.
Yeah, and you mentioned the previous meeting when the Indianapolis went into Nashville and took out a 34-26 victory. Lost in that final box score, 27-point outburst by those two teams in the fourth quarter. And we forgot to mention earlier, the current numbers at BetOnline on this particular matchup, you're looking at the Colts, a three-point favorite. Lay $1.05, you want to back the chalk, 52.5. The total here, a little bit surprised, too, that you see that Tennessee only averaged about 4.5 yards per carry. More importantly, they only rushed the ball 28 times, mainly because they were facing a deficit. I'd have to believe that they're going to make a much more concerted effort this week on the road to commit to that ground game.
That's the only thing that scares me about this total. If there's that commitment to the ground game, simply looking at the film, this is where we attack Indianapolis, and then maybe a slow start. We talk about the bye week since the new CBA in 2011 not really being conducive to success. So maybe you see a slow start there, compounded with Tennessee wanting to ground and pound. That would be the only thing that would leave me a little nervous going over here.
I know a lot of people may wonder where the breakdown of the New Orleans-Carolina game is, but if you're new to the Bet the Board podcast, we covered the Thursday night football game last before we bid you a fond farewell for the weekend. And as always, the Thursday night and Monday night games breakdowns are brought to you courtesy of the American Gaming Association. And Payne, from a game that may have a lot of points, Tennessee and Indianapolis, to a game where I'm not sure either of these teams will break 20 up in the Twin Cities, Minnesota Pick'em against the Arizona Cardinals. Total in this game, 40, trending closer to 39.5. We can call this the Disappointment Bowl because come Sunday at about 1 o'clock out here on the West Coast, one of these teams may find themselves completely eliminated, not mathematically, but theoretically, from the NFC playoff picture.
I know you've probably got a little bit more on this game than I do. Just two underachieving teams in need of a victory. Arizona's made this travel east for the 1 o'clock start. We know sometimes it's been over factored into the number, but for Arizona, has really struggled the last few years in this spot here. The key matchup, though, is that Arizona defensive line against Minnesota's weak offensive front. That's going to be the key in every single Minnesota game moving forward. Can that offensive line do enough to protect Bradford, keep him upright? You watched the game in great length and detail, probably watched it multiple times against Washington. That change in offense under Shurmur, really going to the short passing game for Minnesota, getting it out of Bradford's hands quick, that's going to be much needed this week. Still a question mark surrounding the Honey Badger on defense for Arizona. Very, very questionable for this game as well. So I don't have a ton on it. I kind of agree with your side, potentially more first half area, getting that sleepy start from Arizona.
Yeah, when you look at Minnesota, and you're right, I did watch that game in great detail when it went on live and then went back and watched the film again. Amazing to see Minnesota start to identify some things that worked against the Redskins throughout the second quarter. But aside from that, clearly Minnesota just didn't show the ability to connect on big plays. And as we know in this league, when you can't pick up chunk yardage against elite defenses, it makes it very difficult to drive the length of the field time in, time out. Minnesota's still unable to run the football, and that's largely contributed to this four-game losing streak. Amazing to think just about a month ago we were talking this team controlled its own destiny, potential home field advantage through the NFC, and now, unless they can pull off a big home victory, going to be sitting right at 500 and maybe even a game and a half to 2 games behind division leader Detroit. If things break the right way, I will say for fantasy players out there, I'm not sure he's going to be available anywhere, but if you have him on your bench, no reason not to have Stephon Diggs out there starting. Double-digit catches each of the last 2 games and has really emerged, much like we saw early in the year, as Sam Bradford's primary target. I just don't know where the big plays come from here. A little bit concerned about Minnesota defensively. You mentioned Tyrann Mathieu and his status very much up in the air for Arizona. Not sure how healthy the Vikings are. I just don't see Arizona doing a whole lot in big plays either. So if it's not turnovers, I agree. I will make a case to go under the total here. You might be able to find a 20 before this market ticks down to that 19.5 range. So potentially worth a small investment, although not our full bet the board endorsed large positions that we like to try and stick to.
Yeah, I would agree with those sentiments. The thing for me, and again, we're in this era of fantasy football, but you really, games are decided inside out. And so this Minnesota offensive line was below average coming into the season. When you now remove two of the starting offensive linemen due to injury, Boone is playing extremely beat up. They brought in Jake Long kind of as a stopgap. He went out on a cart last week. So there's some more injuries on that offensive line for Minnesota, which would scare me a bit here. Obviously, big home field advantage. So for me, I would lean your way as well, under, and I don't envision the 20 lasting very long, and that's a key number here. You definitely, if you are going first half under, want 20, because 19.5 essentially is 17.5.
Yeah, it really changes the dynamic of that particular result. One thing, thankfully, that those two teams won't have to worry about up there in Minneapolis is weather, but there's a good chance that weather may affect this game. In Cincinnati, where Buffalo comes in off of the bye week, that narrow loss on Monday Night Football about 2 weeks ago against the Seattle Seahawks. We're looking at the Bengals, a 2.5-point favorite. Lay $1.20 at BetOnline if you want to back the chalk. Total on this game, 47.5. Payne, we went into great detail about some of the things ailing Cincinnati and their limited big play potential on the offensive side. Buffalo, we know that their primary method for moving the football is on the ground. Tyrod Taylor kind of leads that multi-headed attack. How do we begin to assess Buffalo and what their season prognosis looks like moving forward?
In general, we're now in week 11. This needs to be the time where you start looking at weather. And this is the first real weekend where there's going to be some weather. We talked about the offensive lines last week. We know this Bengals O-line isn't very good. Dead last in a lot of metrics. They've kind of just gotten old. Whitworth, he's now nearly 35 years old playing left tackle. The key here is Zampezi, the offensive coordinator for Cincinnati, just isn't very good. During the bye week, Buffalo, specifically the Ryan brothers, have made it their top priority to not allow the big play. And so when you have this focus factor on not allowing the big play, some potential weather there, it's not going to be as easy to just chuck it up to AJ Green. So there's an inherent advantage there for Buffalo. On the other side of the ball, there is an injury for Buffalo. It's their center. It's Eric Wood. He's going to be out for the season. The benefit to this, though, is at least they've had the bye week to prepare for it. And as much as Rex Ryan makes this guy sound like, you know, he's going to be a day one Hall of Famer, I think he's the 30th rated center. So I don't know if it's a huge loss, especially with 2 weeks to prepare. Getting some weapons back as well. Not sure what Percy Harvin is at this stage in his career, but when you look at the Bills' other options, this is probably some help. Hearing he'll be a key cog Sunday after using the bye week to really get him acclimated back into the system. And this Buffalo team, the most efficient run game in the NFL, the most explosive run plays in the NFL. Cincinnati's had a tough time stopping the run. Public a little bit on Buffalo, but this is a real position here. Buffalo +3 was taken early in the week. Could see them making a compelling teaser leg now that they're at 2.5, getting them back through the 3 and the 7 as well.
With the number trending off the 3, how low in all reality do you think this number could drop? Do we think we could be talking about Cincinnati a 1-point favorite closer to kickoff, or is coming off the 3 we will see a little bit of resistance there looking to back the Bengals?
Yeah, you know, nothing would surprise me here, especially when you see a Cincinnati team lose on national TV. So if the public's involved and the professionals are involved, it could create that perfect storm to see this close near a pick.
It'd be an interesting game, because I think you mentioned, we know a lot of folks sitting on Buffalo under their regular season win totals, that they're able to go on the road and get the W this Sunday.
This is
break
the one that's
quite
vital.
Nicely for them.
Yeah, this is the one that's vital. If you're sitting under 8 on Buffalo, you're like, heck, they need to go 5-2 to beat me. And then all of a sudden you start looking at that schedule. You get the Browns, you get the Jaguars with a win here, which we've probably seen some professional support for. It starts to get a little bit dicey.
All of a sudden, the AFC East offers a little bit of intrigue, with Buffalo and Miami potentially battling for what may ultimately be that last and final wild card spot. Two teams right now on the inside of their respective playoff picture, Baltimore and Dallas. The Ravens go on the highway, a game we talked about a little bit on Monday, where a look-ahead number projected Dallas a 6.5-point favorite. This number now at the Cowboys, a 7-point favorite, lay $1.20 if you want to back America's team. Total in this game, 45 at BetOnline. And Payne, I think when you look at this particular matchup, you have one team that runs the football extremely well, one team that can't run it at all, and more importantly, if in the case of the Ravens here, one team that stops the run exceptionally well.
You know, we try to look at a lot of metrics, and those are key. And you do have guys that only look at numbers. And I think it's a great starting point, but you can only do so well just looking at those numbers. You have to factor in a lot of elements. And this is the spot of all spots here, right? You know, you get Baltimore extended prep time off the Thursday night game. Dallas gets the big come from behind win against a team they knew they had to be focused against. They knew they had to bring their best effort against. So you start to take a gander at the schedule here if you're the Dallas Cowboys and you have your hated division rival on Thanksgiving 96 hours after this non-conference Ravens game. So from a market perspective, Dallas, you know, a public team, they've covered 8 in a row, as Mason alluded to. When does the market catch up? We know the opposing teams fare very well at Jerry's World. I'm looking at this number right here. The last 17 home games for the Cowboys, they've covered those 17 at a 29% clip. The question for me is...
Hang up. One thing though, Payne. Those aren't the Dak Prescott-led Dallas Cowboys.
That is true.
Accounted for in those lovely trends of yours.
That is true. Some are. Some are not. Now that he's basically been handed the job, he's been given the job, he's been given that vote of confidence... Does the little sigh of relief factor kick in here? Maybe not as much urgency. We'll see. But the thing that scares me here, it's this Ravens offense. It's dead last in efficiency. Are they going to be able to improve enough just to muster some points here? And my mind is going in two directions here because I want to say yes. I want to say that they do improve. Marshall Yanda has been out. He was a full participant in practice yesterday. That is massive for this offense. He's one of the best linemen in football. Dixon, you know, he's your guy. He's starting to get some... He got starter reps in preseason.
My guy was getting touches in the flat. They incorporated more in the passing game. Yep. He's not going to be a between-the-tackles runner, the pride and joy of Louisiana Tech.
Yep, so they were using him potentially as a day-one starter. Gets injured. He's now back. Acclimated a little bit more against that vaunted Browns defense. So this is virtually, you know, his... When you look at all this... Breshad Perriman, big catch on Thursday Night Football. This is essentially his rookie year. Missed the entire season. Does he start to develop? Steve Smith Jr., senior, he's kind of the ageless wonder. I think, you know, he's been injured. He's now back healthy. So that's my fear here is that the offense doesn't do enough. I'd like to think they do. But the problem is when you look at what they've faced, they're dead last in efficiency and have faced the easiest slate of defenses. So I'm not really sure that's going to be a huge improvement there. I'm hoping it is, not quite sure. You know, last week, 6 points in the first half on national television against the Browns defense. Like, that just scares me. That's what's kept me off this game right now.
When we look at the Dallas Cowboys, so much is made of the offensive line. Dak Prescott, what he's meant to giving them a stabilizing influence under center. Ezekiel Elliott has put up gaudy numbers every which way you look. I think the Dallas defense, Payne, I wanted to get your take on that particular unit as I'm going through their rushing numbers. They haven't given up over 100 yards rushing to an opponent since they went to San Francisco back the first weekend of October. Against Cincinnati, 96 yards. Against Green Bay, 78 yards. Versus Philadelphia, 97 yards. In the last 2 weeks, the Browns, they gave up 45 yards rushing on the road and 48 yards rushing against the Steelers. Are we starting to buy into the Cowboys and what they're doing defensively as much as anything else?
I've been buying into Rod Marinelli for 2 years now. What he's done defensively there with a load of injuries, a load of suspensions has been pretty admirable. The guys love him. I mentioned this stat on the Monday edition of Bet the Board. Before Antonio Brown's 154-yard outburst, this Rod Marinelli-led defense had not allowed a 100-yard running back all season, had not allowed a 100-yard receiver all season. So, quietly, this defense has been very, very good. Some of it is due to how efficient the offense been, the ground game keeping them off the field, but it's really been a defense that's overachieved. Rod Marinelli, early in the season when Claiborne was there, did some minor adjustments, putting him on the different side of the field. All of a sudden, he went from being an absolute bust to one of the best cornerbacks this season so far. So there is a lot to like on the defensive side of the ball. The question mark here is, and again, Baltimore, are they going to be able to stop the run just a little bit? This defense right now, number one in the NFL at stopping the run, so that'll be a good matchup. But is Baltimore's defense as good as some of the metrics state? They really haven't faced a lot of great offenses at this point. They'll face one here in this spot.
Last thing on this particular game, $100 million question. Do we think we see a 7.5 naturally occurring in the market closer to Sunday?
Potentially. It scares me. Like, again, all the sharp guys, they're not just huddled around the campfire, you know, saying we're going to just attack this game. At some point, someone gets an itchy trigger finger and goes, and then the hooks become unattainable. I would hope most people are smart here and just wait this thing out. I was hoping, and I thought maybe there might have been potential to get 9.5, and then obviously I'm buying in a market somewhere far, far away, getting 10 minus 12. That would have been ideal, but...
We can all live in a fantasy world if we want.
Yeah, it's just if this gets to 7.5,
right? There's nothing
to stop it, you know, going to 9.5.
Exactly.
Preventing some of those teaser game day legs. Yep. So, I have access to some hooks now that are fairly cheap, but I just, again, there's a lot of those question marks. Is Baltimore's defense for real? Really haven't played a bunch of teams. Can the offense improve enough? Scares me that answer might be no, considering who they've played defensively. But Baltimore is definitely going to be the side of the sharp guys here.
I think you just broke a myth for a lot of our loyal Bet the Board listeners that all the sharp guys in the world do not share one singular group text and move on games at the exact same juncture in time. So I don't want to tell – I may be telling sports bettors that Santa Claus doesn't exist.
Well, I know you get your huevos busted there for your Joes and Pros thing, and you know, you're kind of just picking the ones that they do all agree on, and there's clear cases where we don't all agree. Specifically with one group that likes to damage the market a little bit. Not everyone agrees.
Exactly. And, you know, referencing that Pros versus Joe segment, I can tell you with some level of confidence that it pained me to put the Bears on there as a professional selection as a road favorite against Tampa.
I like the pun there.
And yeah, exactly. And clearly it did not pay dividends for those folks looking to try and use a lot of those selections and pools. Or what have you, but the Pros still on the plus side of the ledger, and the Joes plays continue to line people's pockets if you're willing to fade them. Late afternoon out on the West Coast, a game that probably didn't have much intrigue when we chatted on Monday, but oh, what a difference a starting quarterback can make. The Miami Dolphins, a 1.5-point road favorite in Los Angeles to take on the Rams. Total in this game, 40 at BetOnline. For those folks that haven't been paying attention, Jared Goff, the number one pick in the 2016 NFL entry draft, will make his league debut under center. Jeff Fisher saying that he thinks the young quarterback may give his offense the best chance to put up points. Go figure. The Rams go on the road to the Jets, get a win, don't score a touchdown, and this is what gets Goff his start against the suddenly white-hot Miami Dolphins.
There's so many angles to look at this game from, and we can kind of spitball a bunch of these. I think the market hates Goff. Obviously, there's been talks, ESPN, Fox, it just doesn't matter that there's been this negative connotation associated with Goff. Why hasn't he gotten acclimated? Is he too dumb? You know, Hard Knocks kind of painted that picture that he's a space cadet, and so it's kind of carried on with him. We know the offense he ran at Cal, a lot of shotgun, a lot of like, you know, just holding up three cards here with goofy pictures on them. And that's the offense, a little bit different when you put them under center. So that negative connotation has really affected this line here. The public is all over Miami. So this is a real tough game for me because I think there would be some sharp money at three. We've seen some guys that are professionals step out ahead of the market. Took Miami at Pick'em, just trying to get out ahead of the market. Not sure that's the real position. I think there would be some buyback at three. But in general, when you talk about the Dolphins, they're in a good place internally. You know, that vibe has changed. They're the team that did not travel this week. They stayed on the West Coast after San Diego. You know, Stephen Ross, the owner, is out there on the West Coast hanging out with them, hanging 10, you know, surfing, whatever it is that they're doing out there. It's the Rams that flew to New York last week, then had to fly back home. So just in general, a huge organizational change for the Dolphins, and that started with Adam Gase holding everybody accountable.
Offensive line questions. Looks like Brandon Albert going to miss the game with a dislocated wrist. How much does that impact the handicap, knowing that the strength of this Rams football team is their defensive front?
It is their defensive front, but for whatever reason, they're not getting a ton of pressure on the quarterback from that defensive front. We also saw there is an injury concern there from that defensive line. So that'll be, you know, a big thing. But we talk about the unicorn offensive line. We'll talk about it since 2014 when Brandon Albert goes, when Mike Pouncey goes, when Juwan James goes. This Dolphins team goes. They're 10-1 when those three guys all start. That's not going to be the case this week. It looks like they'll ship Tunzel out to left tackle, his natural position, and then they'll slide. I think it looks like Craig Urbeck in at left guard. He started last year for the Buffalo Bills, was pretty good getting up there in age, but he's a veteran. He's experienced in a one-game setting. I'm sure he's going to do just fine.
Total, we've seen open at 41, now down to 40 at BetOnline. Some other shops even towards 39.5, trending under. Anything worth exploring with that particular angle, or the Goff unknown makes it a little bit difficult, knowing that maybe he goes out there and has some success against the Dolphins defense, or the other flip side of the coin is that he turns the ball over creating short fields?
Yeah, I think there's always that element there where at 39.5, there's just not a lot of wiggle. You get a defensive score, you get a special team score, or a team that gets set up with short fields. It's certainly, you know, a tough number, especially 41.5. Those are kind of some important numbers there now at 39.5, 40. Nothing that I would be looking at. Clearly, this Miami team is going to stay dedicated to the ground. But we saw last week, Tannehill just looks a little more comfortable. That quarterback whisper, Adam Gase, he dropped two dimes that were probably the best throws that I have seen Ryan Tannehill make in his entire career. That throw to Kenny Stills was an absolute dime. The throw late to Parker, an absolute dime. And Adam Gase commented this week, said, "I don't know if I've seen two better passes from any quarterback. And I've dealt with Manning. I've dealt with Jay Cutler, who you may not like. I may not like. He may be, you know, a space cadet. But when it comes to arm talent, Jay Cutler has it." So pretty high praise there from Gase in terms of Tannehill and those two throws he made.
A little more upside in a game, like we said, that'll have some intrigue that otherwise wouldn't have been there with Goff getting a start.
You know, the one thing, you're an athlete. Well, I shouldn't say you're an athlete.
I'm no longer an athlete. I used to be an athlete.
But think about this. You know, when we all played sports and we all played travel sports and you're in a tournament, you get the first win, things start to go well. So they're a team that's spent the last 2 weeks out on the West Coast. If they lose that game against San Diego, what's the vibe? You get a win, you're flying high, you're feeling good. Suddenly that momentum carries over. So I could see why, again, some professional bettors got out ahead of the market, knows where this is going to go, took some pick, probably will come back if the dog gets to 3. But there are some angles here for the Dolphins, despite the public being on them as well.
Well, it's a big game as well. I mean, you talk about some of the momentum they've built up with the 4-game win streak. They beat the Rams here, a very winnable game, next week against the 49ers before the schedule gets slightly different, with a road trip to Baltimore, home game against the Cardinals, and then road games within the division at the Jets and at the Bills before closing with the Patriots. So I think if Miami has aspirations on getting to the postseason, something that we thought was highly unlikely and more or less improbable coming into the year, it almost feels like this is a must-win for them.
Yeah, you need to carry that momentum, get the big win. That five-hour flight back from the West Coast will certainly be a much better one going 2-0.
Funny you talk about momentum, because the team playing in another late afternoon spot, the Seattle Seahawks, has to have plenty of that. Having flown across the country on a short week, beating New England as a 7.5-point underdog, depending on where you're able to lock that number in. The Seahawks find themselves as a 6.5-point home favorite playing host to the Philadelphia Eagles. Total on this game has taken some money, not only since the open, but since we started this podcast, Payne. Open 45.5, 46, was 44 early this morning. And as we sit here and recording, I'm watching the 44 start to disappear, trend closer to 43 at BetOnline. Would not be shocked by the time we release this if it's actually down to 42.
Yeah, it's a tough number to miss, 44 right now, the most key total number in the NFL. And this is a tough spot for Seattle. We've talked about last week the defense, the time that they've spent on the field. They had their Super Bowl revenge last week. Now you're traveling back to the West Coast. So again, feels like a tough spot for Seattle. But you know, they have this championship pedigree. They have the veterans. We really haven't seen a huge down spot for them. The problem here is, and I think this is being worked on a little bit, I think Philadelphia is going to end up being the side here. If you can get seven, which I think is what's trying to go on here. And again, the seven becomes potentially a little more valuable as this total continues to tick down. But do you want Wentz in this spot? And again, we know what all the metrics say. He's a fantastic quarterback. But there's not a moment where me, you, any of our loyal listeners watching that Eagles game weren't just on the edge of their chair waiting for him to, you know, potentially make a mistake. The IQ wasn't great last week, so that scares me. And when we look at this total, and it's down to 42 as we record. The thing here is the Eagles defense. Which version do we see? They've been fantastic this season, number one in overall efficiency, but there's been a glaring difference when they're home and when they're away. At home, surrendering less than 10 points in their four home games. Nearly 25 allowed when on the road. So will that defense travel this week? That's the big question here. And again, for Seattle, I know the yards per play weren't great, but they picked up 96 yards on the ground, and at least it makes the opposing defense have to scheme some for the ground game a bit. Procise getting acclimated in his rookie year, clearly not an every down back. Rawls supposed to be back this week. And if you talk to any lineman, they want rhythm. They want to attack. They prefer run blocking because you are attacking as opposed to pass blocking where, you know, you're on your heels being attacked. So a positive sign there for Seattle. And they don't have to be great running the ball. They just don't have to. They just can't be horrific. And if there's a slight upgrade there, you're going to see this Seattle team really be a force.
You mentioned Philadelphia's defense on the road, and that 25 points per game would get even worse if you back out their 14-point performance against the Chicago Bears all the way back in Week 2. Those four games at Detroit surrendering 24 points and a loss, at Washington 27 and a loss, and that game, actually, the Eagles' defense cleaned itself up a bit in the second half. It was a lot worse over the first 30 minutes. At Dallas, 29 points in overtime, and of course, at the Giants surrendering 28. So very fascinating to see this line move for
slight
a variety
back
of factors
up
you mentioned.
Once it got to 42 there.
Yeah, there was a little bit of resistance. There are still some 44s out there, especially here in the desert. So
Russell Wilson getting healthier, the offense starting to hum a bit too.
Yeah, and I think you talk about finding some of that continuity on the offensive side. Rawls has to be a lot healthier than he's been, given the fact that the team released Christian
Michael
earlier
this
week.
Been practicing for a month. They're kind of, they wanted him at 110%, my famous line there. He's been practicing for a month now. They did not want to throw him back out there. They tried earlier in the season, not at 100%, and they just said, listen, we know kind of what we are. We're a big-picture team. When we bring Rawls back this next time, he's got to be 100%. And so he's been practicing for 4 weeks now, just kind of chomping at the bit, trying to get back out there.
And this no different than what the team was able to do last year with Marshawn Lynch. Give Michael the carries, start to see Procise emerge. As we mentioned, he'll go to a third down back type of role, not the run blocker, but a great threat coming out of the backfield. So,
Christian Michael, poor guy. He's if you Google used prophylactic, you know, Christian Michaels might pop right up. They've just been using that guy. They've picked him up, cut him, used him as kind of the workhorse there, and then just dump him to the frickin' ground. I think he's been cut and picked up by Seattle three times in the last 14 months.
It's that yo-yo relationship. Any of the guys out here on this podcast have been there before, whether it's currently or in the past, in our younger years. You go into those relationships that seem to be a little bit one-sided, and we become gluttons for punishment when we don't have any better opportunities out there to try and take advantage of.
Yeah, that's probably a little better example, a little more PG version than I was going.
Well, I mean, when you talk about, you know, geriatric masturbation taking place in a movie theater in Boca to use prophylactic, clearly we know the direction of this podcast. We like to think of ourselves as a family show but gambling the primary subject matter. We do have to cross some boundaries from time to time.
Absolutely. Reel me in.
When we look at the rest of the games, Payne, I know we didn't cover every great game in great detail. Was there anything anything of note we're sharing with our listeners for some of the less than marquee matchups on Sunday?
Yeah, I know Mason mentioned potentially some early sharp money coming in on Kansas City. I am kind of a different ilk there. I think we'll see some professional money on Tampa. Not so much in love with Tampa. More of a fade of Kansas City. You know, the 7-2 it might be as phony as it gets. I'm understanding of their injuries, but you get dominated 2 weeks ago at home against Jacksonville. You get dominated and kind of luck box your way into a win last week despite just 256 yards of total offense here. Doug Martin looked a little bit healthier last week. I know he got a bunch of carries, so if you can kind of shorten the clock, shorten the game with a ground game, we know that's where Kansas City is a little susceptible. If Doug Martin's fully healthy, you could see Tampa probably try to squeak their way in the back door here.
Doesn't sound like we've committed to a Bet the Board brand sponsored stamped investment.
Not a thing yet this week. And I you know, hate to keep doing this. We'd obviously love to throw them out on the podcast, but again, I'm just not going to endorse anything I personally have not bet. That's just how I do business. So I have not made a single bet this week so far. Again, we'll post it on bettheboardpodcast.com. Again, so there's no questions. You will see it at the bottom of the actual podcast. So when you go to the front page, you'll see this one posted. This podcast will be right on the homepage, or you can go to the podcast archive section. It will be the very first one. Click read more. You'll see a little write up for the podcast. Below that, you'll see something that says worth an investment. And our goal is to have it out by what? No later than Sunday, 10 a.m.?
Yeah, 10 a.m. Eastern time, okay. I think is fair. It gives folks adequate time before they get on with their days, family responsibilities, and everything else. So want to try and get that out there for you. And Payne, judging by the amount of traffic the website saw on Sunday morning, I think this is a method that appears to work for folks who are willing to wait the extra... are willing to wait the extra 48 to 72 hours to make sure it's an investment that we really feel comfortable with rather than just throwing something out on the podcast for the sake of doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it.
And as always, as Payne mentioned, bettheboardpodcast.com, some great articles up there to help improve that gambling IQ. And if you appreciate the podcast, the content, or anything else we've been able to do to assist in building those bankrolls this fall, purchase a t-shirt, great gambling swag to wear around the family during the holidays. Give the podcast a retweet through social media. The more listeners we get, the more eyeballs on the content allows us to do a lot of creative things that I think all of you will enjoy.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, and like we said, you can follow Payne on Twitter, at Payne Insider. You can follow me on Twitter as well, at Todd Furman, and of course the podcast, at Bet the Board Pod. Payne, the Thursday night game, one that offers quite a bit of intrigue, giving two late collapses between the Saints and Panthers. As always, the Thursday night game of the week brought to you courtesy of the American Gaming Association. You can check out all of their great work for ongoing legalization efforts at americangaming.org and follow them on Twitter at Amer, A-M-E-R, Gaming, G-A-M-I-N-G-A-S-S-N. We'll look to have the CEO of the American Gaming Association on this very podcast in the coming weeks to talk about some of the creative things they're doing. It is the mission of the AGA to be the single most effective champion of the industry, relentlessly protecting against harmful and often misinformed public policies and paving a path for growth, innovation, and reinvestment. If you're looking to sign up for real live updates, americangaming.org/about/contact. And Payne, Saints Panthers tonight. When we look at this game, BetOnline, Carolina, a 3-point favorite, lay $1.25. If you want to back Cam Newton and company. Total in this game, 52, shaded to the under. We're going to talk about this game being a potential for one of these teams to emerge in the division. The Saints, an unfortunate collapse late with a blocked extra point that went to the other way. And Carolina, we talked about them in great detail on Monday. Cam Newton with some ill-advised decision-making, taking a little bit of the luster away from this Carolina resurgence.
Yeah, you know, you being kind of the producer of the show, I'm sure you hated me saying I haven't actually bet anything this week before we actually got to the big game. But again, have not invested in this game.
I mean, it's not exactly the best tease when it comes to Roy Restaurant, so if we see a massive drop-off in listenership over the last 8 to 10 minutes, we'll know exactly why.
Yep, exactly. So there has been some professional money on the dog. My power numbers would jive with that. My power numbers were so far off on this game that I got a little hesitant. I said, maybe something's a little off right here. But the market's kind of agreeing with what my power numbers were. Carolina just a massive loss last weekend. I'm not sure how that blow will affect them. We know Cam Newton is just kind of an emotional wreck right now. I will say this. He came out. He has been very, very happy that his center, Ryan Khalil, is back tonight. He's going to play with a harness, so not sure how healthy he is, but his center's back. And we know Cam right now is playing a little tentative. That's kind of the nice way to put it. We talked about those huge loss plays there when they were up 17-3 looking to extend the lead to three scores. He took a couple sacks. That last sack, granted, pressure was coming his way, but old Cam would have flushed himself out of the pocket, used the stiff arm, got it out of bounds, kept them in field goal range. He hit the deck 2 yards before a defender got to him. So he's kind of in his own head right now, so that scares me a little bit here. But the other thing here, Carolina has faced the easiest slate of opposing offenses. I am not sure how good that defense is. We know problems in the secondary. This is not the team you want to face if you have problems in the secondary.
I mean, we saw the meeting earlier this season. Carolina had no answers for what New Orleans was able to do. A game where the Saints were listed as a 2.5-point home underdog and were able to take full advantage. The question I have, with a short week, Payne, any benefit to New Orleans getting out of town knowing the heartbreaking loss to Denver? Is it harder for Carolina to face their home fans given the way that they lost? Where do you think these two teams are psychologically, knowing that New Orleans 4-5 in the division, a chance to get to 500 and maybe make a late push to the playoffs? Carolina now a real uphill battle as they stare down the barrel of a 3-6 start.
These games are always tough on Thursday night, and I know we haven't seen the best games, and it's because they're so early in the week. I mean, you talk to a lot of players, they have trouble getting out of bed Monday morning. They're barely moving by Wednesday, and poof, here's a game Thursday. But there is an advantage for the home team. You know, they have that full extra day where there is no travel. Some of that can be negated based on the division games. It's a familiar opponent. You know what your team's going to do. The opposing team likely is not implementing everything brand new 72, 96 hours in advance. So these two teams are familiar. They know what they want to do. The one positive here, again, for the mental state of Cam Newton, he has always had great success against this New Orleans team. So mentally, he may be coming into this game saying, I've had great success. I'm going to have great success here again. He feels like a front runner. He feels like a guy that decides the outcome of a game pretty early on. So that mentally might be an advantage here for Cam Newton.
Well, sharp money on the dog definitely makes for some sure. sense. But as we've talked about, not a game that either of us are running to try and bet, whether it be side or total. And like we talk about every Monday and Thursday here on Bet the Board, sometimes these standalone primetime games offer a little bit of value. Sometimes they don't. And unfortunately, this past Monday night, I don't say we forced a play because I don't think there was a whole lot lost between +2 and Pick'em. It just didn't go the way we would have imagined for the Bet the Board listeners. So rather,
I will say this: some would disagree. The two losses that we've had, Jacksonville, Baltimore.
Yeah,
I think that was the one time we've had a game move against us. It's a rare thing, but game day you could have taken 2.5 with the Jags. That would have got you there. And then again this week, you take 1.5 too, which were definitely available early on. Could have cashed that. So some tight games.
Yeah, go figure, though. The two games that we've lost that stick out to me on this podcast, the Baltimore-Jacksonville game and the Cincinnati Giants game. We talk about dead numbers, less than three. Apparently not such dead numbers for games that we like to give out on this podcast.
No, a little more relevant, again, this day and age with the 3-7 being devalued just a touch based on some of the new rules. Teams kind of taking that Mike Tomlin approach there, going for two a little bit more. The extra point being moved back now. It hasn't been a dramatic difference. The numbers go from about 99% make rate down to around 94-95% moving those kickers back, but certainly just devaluing the 3-7 just a bit. Still key numbers. You obviously still want to get them, and in general, even dead numbers, I just always want the best of the number. That's just good practice for me, but certainly games falling one a little bit more often in this day and age.
You know what's not devalued, Payne? The importance of being disciplined. And fortunately, we'll have a one-and-done selection for our listeners come Sunday morning. So encourage everyone to check out BetTheBoardPodcast.com. I want to thank Dave Mason of Bet Online for joining us as he does each and every Thursday. You can follow Dave on Twitter at DaveMasonBOL. However, next week, a little addendum to the schedule adjustments being made for the holiday season. Payne, you want to share some of those updates with our listeners?
I was just sipping water. I just finished my 70th ounce of water here during this podcast.
We're not even at noon. What have you done? You've probably put about 100 ounces of water in the system?
Yep, about 100 ounces of water in the system. So I was going for a gulp there. Tuesday, we will have the podcast. No Monday podcast, no Thursday podcast. One podcast next week. It'll be on Tuesday, probably around lunchtime. We're still trying to figure out the schedule, but our goal here, obviously, is to have it out at some point Tuesday, so it is ready for your listening pleasure while you're traveling to wherever it is you're traveling to for Thanksgiving.
And for folks who are worried about the actual release time, there's one way to solve that. Sign up, SoundCloud, iTunes, or, of course, subscribe to the Bet the Board podcast newsletter, a pretty easy template to fill out at bettheboardpodcast.com. That way, whenever it drops on Tuesday, you'll have it at your disposal. And as Payne mentioned, you can listen to it with your family and friends as you head off to those holiday destinations. So for Payne Insider, you can follow him on Twitter, as always, at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. BetTheBoardPodcast.com and the Twitter handle at BetTheBoardPod. Best of luck with your Thursday selections for Saints and Panthers. And remember to check the website come Sunday morning with our official worthwhile investment from the Bet The Board team. And maybe we just might have a surprise for you come Tuesday's holiday show.